We're back on QR Calgary and More Than Money. Leanna, when we sit down with clients or Canadians that are approaching or living in retirement, they tell us the three biggest issues when it comes to inflation that they notice. Number one, at the grocery store. Number two, heating their homes or the pump when they're filling up gas. Number three, to get on a plane, traveling. Those are the three biggest concerns they have when it comes to inflation. And after they say that, they go, you know, we spent a few dollars as the Canadian taxpayers on this pipeline. It was supposed to make things better for our economy, make things better for our cost structure, for our homes. What's happening? And that's a great point to ask, you know?
Absolutely. It's a great question because have we really seen an impact? Well, people don't really know. So we have a fantastic guest to tell us about that.
When you look at the difference of what people are feeling and what we're seeing, when you and I report the market numbers on this station and on other stations, we mention the price of oil. We don't mention Western Canadian Select. We mention WTI, and there is a differential between those two. It's supposed to narrow that gap because of these new pipelines and so forth coming in, and we haven't seen it fully yet. And so we have our guest to tell us more about this, Dan McTeague, President of Canadians for Affordable Energy. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, great to be here, Faisal and Leanna. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's get right into this. When it comes to this whole setup of the new pipe, we spent a few dollars, right, Dan, as taxpayers?
$34 billion and counting. So yeah, to build the Trans Mountain Pipeline, which expansion, about 580,000 barrels a day at the top end. And much of that would have been built by Kinder Morgan had it not been for the fact that Kinder Morgan had enough of federal regulators not standing by the agreement to get that pipeline built. So we wound up being on the hook. Although it's a lot of money, it ultimately will be paid back, especially when you consider the amount and the volumes that are going through that pipeline now at about $70 a barrel. With 500,000, that's $35, $40 million in economic activity every single day. And that's really had in many ways, promise that things could get better, but also probably helped in ways that we haven't considered, things like the Canadian dollar, which of course has been struggling of late. And this probably prevented it from further decline.
So this was a good investment by the federal government?
I think it was an unnecessary investment by the federal government. As a Liberal MP of 18 years and one who had the energy file for a good decade within that period of time, the federal government should have stood by its agreement and not allowed those to use lawfare and other strategies to hijack what had already been permitted. The company itself, Kinder Morgan, had gone and really done cartwheels to ensure that everyone would be happy. It probably wasn't the best pipeline of all the ones that the federal government could have looked at. I think Northern Gateway would have been a lot less controversial, but it is what it is. And, you make a bad situation, the best of a bad situation. I think the federal government now realizes that allowing, organizations, many of them internationally funded, to take pot shots at things that are important for economic development, which the world wants, isn't a very bright strategy. And I think if they had to do it all over again, they might have reconsidered, not standing up, or at least reconsidered the position of not standing up for the very regulatory agreements that they had agreed to. What's important in that is that the federal government would have likely been subjected to a substantial lawsuit had it not taken over and bought Kinder Morgan's Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion, given that the company was within its legal bounds to go after the federal government for not defending its own regulations.
When you think about every taxpayer who hears about this, the one question that I hear time and time again is, when are we going to get our money back?
Well, you're getting back $40 million a day in economic activity times 365 days a year. I don't think this thing is going to see much in the way, including the tolls that are placed on it, much in the way of any return for the next couple of years, which is why I think this thing has to remain on the books. And it's probably not prudent for the federal government to continue this idea that it can continue ownership, but at a time in which there really are no other alternatives, and our biggest customers are China and the United States for what comes off that pipeline, I suspect that the federal government has no choice but to stay and see this thing through, at least until 2027.
And the contribution to the overall Canadian economy and the budget is something that's, of course, important, but it's a little bit of a nebulous concept, I think, for most people. When they're thinking about a pipeline, they're thinking about what impact does that have on the prices that I am paying for gasoline, the prices I'm paying to heat my home, those sorts of things. So what sorts of impacts have we seen from this pipeline on the day-to-day consumer?
Well, I think it's still pretty early, Leanna, to make decisions as to how it's going to impact. But one thing is pretty clear. We've seen a narrowing of WCS, which you alluded to at the outset here, Western Canadian Select, which is really our brand of oil, a heavier slate of oil, of course, to be sure. But it's what is in demand. The light, tight stuff is being produced everywhere around the world, especially the United States with fracking. In Canada, heavy oil is necessary for things like diesel, heating oil, for instance. And we know that natural gas is a proxy of the price of diesel and heating oil. So critical that people understand that, although it's not evident yet, and I have no data on which to back this up, but as I said at the outset, I fear what might have happened to the Canadian dollar had this pipeline not been ready. And I say that because when you think about it, there is probably some things that attract foreign investment into Canada, but not a whole lot, save and except for the kind of things where you have nine leaders of G7 and G20 leadership coming to Canada saying, hey, listen, can you spare some natural gas? Can you spare some of that oil? And our answer has been through the prime minister, there's no business case. Of course, that's absurd and that is not correct. But it does suggest to me that Canadians are benefiting from this, perhaps in ways that are not well understood just yet. One is, of course, the Canadian dollar. Although it takes 137.04 cents, I'm looking at the Canadian dollar right now. I have to do that for my gas price prediction calculations. It's a lot better than, say, where it might have been, $1.42 to buy one U.S. dollar. And since all our commodities, or most strategic commodities, are priced in U.S. terms, that's a benefit that many of us may be taking for granted until such times as we get some economic analysis of what might have happened had that pipeline not opened. I shudder at the thought of what would happen if we had two or three pipelines that were, putting out 6 million barrels of oil a day, exporting. The Canadian economy would be on fire, in my estimation, in my humble opinion. But having looked at this issue, at least since 1995, back when I tabled and wrote a report on behalf of my government at the time, the Liberal Committee on Gasoline Pricing back in 1998, it seems to me that one of the great fears, and it's historical, when I spoke to Jean Chrétien and Paul Martin, finance minister at the time, one of the things they feared is that I was going to go after the upstream, the oil producers and natural gas producers. In fact, this was really about the downstream and competition law. Their fear was that we would create a chill in terms of economic activity that would prevent the federal government at the time from paying down debt. And I think it's important to recognize that if we want to pay down that debt, we want to be fiscally responsible, we want to be financially viable and continue to attract the world's brightest and best, we have to have the economic wherewithal, and that is energy. Like it or not, our natural resources are still, a prized thing around the world, even though we may not recognize it as much here in Canada. Certainly our leadership doesn't, but I think Canadians increasingly recognize the importance.
Dan, we have about a minute left. When we are investing our clients' money and we talk, they have the questions about what's happening in Canada, we many times say back to them, we are investing globally. Canada is a rounding error when it comes to economic impact from a global perspective, even in their portfolios. And it's a hard pill to swallow as a Canadian saying that my own country is a rounding error in the overall economic piece. At what point do you see, if you do, that the energy portion of our industries in this country and the economic activity in this country will make us a bigger economic producer versus contracting, like we have, versus a lot of our peers over the last 25 years?
Well, no one will stand up for Canada or the interest of Canadians if our own leadership doesn't do it and is willing to say we can look at alternatives and there's no business case. But the world, I think, is changing dramatically. Geopolitical tensions around the world are significant. And although they can be trivialized, they can be mitigated, they can be ignored only to a certain extent. And as a country that has a significant amount of energy reserves, both in terms of natural gas and oil, regardless of the International Energy Agency's bad habit of continuing to get its numbers wrong, we are looking at an increase in demand for the next 10, 20 to 30 years, regardless of this transition narrative that we have been focused so heavily on, and for which we are prepared to spend tens of billions of dollars of money we don't have, debt accumulation, in order to achieve. So I think there is a quick rebound, I think, in reality that is going to grip Canadians in the not too distant future, recognizing, of course, that we haven't really stood up to the plate to get our energy resources to global markets that desperately want them.
Dan, we're going to bring you back as we get more and more updates of how the pipeline's doing, how the economy's moving when it comes to energy. I want to thank you for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We've been joined by Dan McTeague, president of Canadians for Affordable Energy. Leanna, this is going to be a big topic about, in a country like ours, how do we get more economic growth? Because it not only helps the individuals who are approaching retirement, helps their family members. Big concern there. We're going to talk about how to help your family and yourself with all these economic challenges at our upcoming seminar. When is that?
That's right. It is on Tuesday, September 10th at 7 p.m. in person at the Carriage House Inn. Now, you do need to register beforehand, so please go to morethanmoneyradio.com or connect with us on Facebook to do that.
Join us after the break. We're going to talk about how business owners can get a bit more bang for their buck when it comes to their digital experience. You're on Cura Calgary and More Than Money.